My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance, ready in 30 seconds. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair. Every style, every home.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clayton Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 386. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
Oh, it's good. Can't complain. Baseball's back. Tired, but we're here. it's all that matters. And we're talking baseball, and not much can beat it, man. Regular season's in full swing. Got some major league players that are popping off, and everybody's overreacting the weak minor league samples. So, you know, it's a typical conversation on April 14th, I guess.
Yeah, this is honestly one of my favorite times of year, just seeing overreactions, and at both major leagues and minor league levels, it's always great to see when it's mid-April and people are freaking out one way or the other. But yeah, I'm pretty tired myself. We're part of the reason why we didn't record yesterday on our usual Sunday slot. I was at a concert last night down in Boston. Went and saw Heart, so I didn't get back home till, what was it, 2:15 in the morning, Monday morning. So a little tired here, but we will trudge through. Got a lot of names here, a few major league names to start, but this is going to be more of a prospect-heavy show. Got good 9, 10, 11 names, something like that on the docket for prospects. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping, you can find us on Twitter. Chris is at Chris Clegg, MILB. I am at Eric Cross, MLB. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. And make sure you check out all the great content over on Rotoballer and win more with Rotoballer's MLB Premium Pass. Gain access to expert tools and advice from proven winners. Import your league's settings, import your leagues with TeamSync and get expert advice customized for your league-specific settings. Win more with Rotoballer's lineup assistant tools, free agent finder, prop picks, and the number one DFS lineup optimizer. It also includes prospect rankings, dynasty rankings, and more content from Chris and I. Our premium pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use the discount code TOOLSHED and win more. All right, let's get into the episode this week. We'll start off with the major league guys here, and starting off with Kyren. What happened with Kyren Parrish, Chris? Like, where did this come from where he has 5 home runs and 5 steals in his first 38 plate appearances, hitting .368, .467, .842 after a, pretty underwhelming minor league career. I think it's easy to say career minor league slash line, .237, .359, .398. So what are your initial thoughts here on his breakout? And do you think it's, obviously not this sustainable, but do you think there's any level of legitimacy here with this breakout?
I mean, yes, and to some extent. I think that's what we have to look at and say, it probably is legitimate to an extent, but it's not like he's going to go nuclear the whole season. Yeah, I mean, five home runs, five stolen bases, and 46 plate appearances is a lot of fun. There's still a lot of concerning things in the underlying data. Yeah, I mean, he's barreling the ball up well. He's got a 60.7% hard hit rate. Like, those things look really good from Paris. But on the flip side, like, the average exit velocity is low. It's 25th percentile. The launch angles are terrible. Like, he's hit the ball at ideal angles enough to make things happen, but it's a 50% ground ball rate, and the sweet spot rate of 25% is 17th percentile for all hitters. The whiffs are scary, too. I mean, you look, and there's still some concerning numbers as far as swing and miss go. And I know the strikeout rate looks fine at 21.7%. Like, that's great, but we're looking at a zone contact rate of 64%. Like, that's like worst in baseball level quality zone contact. So that's really concerning. And the overall contact rate is sub 60%. That's also a major, major concern for me. He's being more aggressive, and I do think the swing changes have allowed some legitimacy in Kyron Paris's game. So yeah, like, I think that he's going to be an interesting player. I think he's going to provide some things for fantasy teams. But there's zero chance you should expect this kind of performance moving forward. Like, pitchers are going to kind of rework how they can pitch to him. Last year was easy. Like, he couldn't hit anything on the outer half. So they just ate him up on the outer half. But could he get exploited moving forward? Yeah, I think so. If you can cash out, it's probably a good opportunity. But, like, what would you take for, or what would it cost to move him? You know, I don't know. So it's interesting with Paris, but I'm expecting regression, but I still think he could be a useful player. So I'm kind of in the middle.
Yeah, it's kind of hard not to be in the middle with this guy. There's some good in the profile, and there's some bad, you know, that you listed out here. You know, he kind of gives me like a Zach Geloff vibe, where it could be like a 2020 profile, but, you know, the contact skill is not there. Though Geloff does strike out a higher clip than Paris has so far, but, you know, this is a very polarizing, a lot of pros, a lot of cons in the profile. He's either really good at something or really bad at something, which is kind of where Zach Geloff is. There's not a lot of sliders that are in the middle. It's like bright red or dark blue. Yeah. So, I mean, I think he's going to keep starting. I think we all thought this was going to be Christian Moore at this point, but Kyron Paris is the one kind of getting the run here, which I think, you know, was a good call not to have Moore, but that's a different topic. But yeah, I can't say I expected anything close to this, but you mentioned he's hitting the ball hard with a 60% hard hit rate, 18% barrel rate. So I think he could make a run. I mean, he's already a quarter of the way there for both, but could make a run at 2020 this year. But yeah, I think that the average is going to dip pretty hard, you know, down below 250. You know, but walk rate, K rate, decent so far. So, I mean, yeah, there's some value here, but yeah, I'm not gonna anoint him the next like big breakout infielder that's gonna be a top 50 or anything like that. I think it's far too early, and there's too many red flags in the profile to go there quite yet. Next one here, or the other two major league guys. Again, only quick major league hits this episode, but Hunter Green. Nobody can touch Hunter Green anymore, which is really fun to watch. Because we kind of always thought that he had this in him. Like, you know, we talked about how many times we talk about on this podcast, like, oh, if he were to, you know, at the time it was like, if he were to use the changeup more, like, now it's a splitter, but just that third pitch in general. And he's, you know, he's still very fastball slider heavy, but that splitter is now up to, you know, close to a 10% usage rate. You know, it's been up, I think, 12-13% this last few starts. And now Hunter Green has a 0.98 ERA, 0.58 whip, 4% walk rate, and a 31.3% K rate this year, and only a 1.00 ERA on the nose since July 1st of last year, which is the best in baseball. So, like, I mean, at this point, I mean, I think it's becoming a massive glob in, like, the back half of the top 10 of Dynasty, you know, starting pitcher rankings. Obviously, you got, you know, Skubal, you got Skeens. I think that's tier one. Tier two is starting to get a little bigger. I mean, beginning of the year, it was, for me at least, you know, maybe probably different from other people, but I thought tier two was a trio of Strider, Logan Gilbert, and Garrett Crochet. And I think Garrett Crochet is still ahead, you know, Strider is still kind of ahead of that tier. But, like, I think you can kind of, where Gilbert is, you can kind of lump in a lot of these other guys, like Hunter Green, like a Cole Reagans, who's been absolutely phenomenal this year. I think that tier is getting bigger for sure. So, like, how high are you going with Hunter Green in your dynasty rankings? He had a good year last year, 2.75 ERA and 26 starts. Seems like he's getting better and better as time goes on. So, I guess how high is too high for Hunter Green?
You know, I think he was trending that way for sure. And then when he had the elbow issues at the end of last year, like, I really kind of pulled back a bit. Like, I was very nervous considering, like, was it his second TJ coming? Like, that was kind of my fear when he had the elbow issues. And he's come back and just, I mean, it's impressive. Like, if there is something wrong with his elbow, then it's working pretty well. Let's just say.
He ain't showing it.
No. So right now, I mean, he hasn't shown any signs of it, I'd say. Like, there's no decline in velocity. The velocity's actually up pretty substantially. Like, last year he averaged 97.6 on the fastball. He's averaging 99.4 right now, which is kind of wild. It's definitely the highest average velocity of his career. And slider's looking good. Slider's up a tick. It's missing bats. And when he's thrown the splitter to lefties, like, it's worked too. So, I mean, that slider is really just the bread and butter here. I mean, 24% whiff rate on four seam is good, but the 54% whiff rate on the slider is elite. And he's just pumping the fastball and letting us do his thing. So, you know, I think that Green could work his way into the top of, you know, top tier pitchers potentially. Like, and he's always had that talent. And he showcased it last year. I mean, a sub 3 ERA in 150 innings, near sub 1 whip. Like, a lot of impressive stuff. So, you know, I'm really intrigued to see, as long as he's healthy.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the big thing with him. And, yeah, I kind of had a similar thought last year. I was a little concerned. Like, all right, was this a great year, but is he going to be able to hold up next year? And, you know, so far, so good. It's only mid-April, but you couldn't ask for a better start from Hunter Green. And, yeah, that splitter, it's just good, like, just good enough. We said he didn't even need a dominant third offering. I wasn't asking him to, like, add a, you know, the dominant slider or add that dominant third pitch, which was a slider for Glasnow, but, like, just serviceable offering to help keep hitters, especially on the left side, off the fastball slider. And that splitter has been that. He can miss bats a little bit with it. It's been pretty effective last year and this year. He hasn't gotten any strikeouts on it yet, but he at least has it in his back pocket. And he's still going to that four seam and slider, and it's just helped the effectiveness of that four seam play up. Because that was another issue where, like, yeah, you're throwing really hard, but he had a, you know, 5.18 slug allowed on that four seam back in 2023. But the last 2 years, it's been absolutely money. You know, batting average against under 190 both years, and a slug allowed 273 last year, 300 so far this year. With that, you know, in really impressive slider that has yet to give up a hit with a whiff rate above 50%. So, yeah, I'm definitely, I think he's no doubt top 10 for me right now. And then, yeah, really in that cluster. Yeah, I think anywhere from, I mean, 3-4 for me is Strider and Crochet. But then, you know, after that, I really got to think of how I want to order those, like those guys I mentioned earlier, you know, Logan Gilbert. And, you know, I think I'd personally put Schwellenbach in there, and with Cole Reagans, Hunter Green, I'm probably forgetting a name right now, but yeah, I think it's becoming a pretty fun little back half of the top 10, and he's definitely in it. So yeah, I think this is legit, and I don't see any reason to think it won't continue unless he, you know, has that injury that we hope he does not have, because he's really fun to watch for sure.
Yep.
Going to another name here, a little less heralded name, but one that's having a really good start to the season as well. And that's Chris Bubich with the Kansas City Royals. I'll admit, you know, I have people asking me my Discord, kind of what I thought about the move from the rotation where he was, from the bullpen where he was pretty good last year, to ERA 2.67 in 27 relief appearances after inconsistent production as a starter, I was, you know, not that optimistic. I thought he was good in the role he was. Wasn't sure if that move back was going to be good. And yeah, it's only three starts, but you know, so far so good, Chris. In 18 and two-thirds innings, only allowed a 0.96 ERA, 0.96 WHIP as well. Five strikeouts to 21 walks. So what are your early thoughts on Chris Bubich, and how much are you buying this early success he's having?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely in it. Everything looks good under the hood. He can live in a lower velocity range, which helps. I mean, he's averaging like 92 on the fastball, but from the left side with the traits that Bubich has, like, it absolutely can work, and I think we're seeing that. It's so deceptive. I mean, he's got 33% whiff rate on it, which is nuts. We mentioned Hunter Green, who's averaging near 100. He had 24% whiff rate on his four-seamer. Shows you how good Bubich can be. Changeup looks good. Sweeper, he's throwing two slider variations in the sweeper and a more traditional slider. Like, this is an arm that I think can be really successful, where, I don't know, I'm pretty in at this point. Like, somebody asked earlier, like, would I trade Trevor Story for Chris Bubich? And I said, absolutely. Like, I think I'm more than in for that. And I think that, you know, Bubich, just the movement profile from the left side and what he brings to the table, I'm very intrigued, and think that, you know, while he's not going to have a sub one ERA and WHIP throughout the whole season, I still think the ratios are going to be pretty good. So I'm in.
Yeah, no, I'm relatively in as well. I mean, look, he throws five different pitches. I mean, the sinker is very small usage rate, so really just four pitches, but uses all four of those, four-seam, changeup, sweeper, slider, to righties. Really just three of them to lefties. Doesn't go with that changeup to lefties outside of a couple times this year. And none have, like, that huge whiff rate, but all four have a whiff rate above 23%, four-seam and changeup both above 30%, changeup's the top one at 36.4%. Gets ground balls, you know, over 50% each of the last 3 years, including this year. Does not give up a lot of pulled air, you know, hard contact. So a lot of good things here. And yeah, he doesn't wow you. It's not like as sexy as a Cole Reagan's profile, but still only 27 years old. You know, maybe he can kind of stick in that top 50-ish starting pitcher range. And Kansas City's kind of, you know, got a pretty sneaky good rotation there, obviously, with Reagans and Bubich, Seth Lugo, Michael Wacha, Michael Lorenzen. You know, they're definitely building a nice little rotation there in Kansas City. And yeah, I'm not like running to get him, but I'm definitely more optimistic now than I was, you know, even a month ago. I definitely will admit that. All right, let's go over to the prospect side here. We'll start off with a few promotions before we get into some hot or cold starts in the minor leagues. Now, we had three promotions over the last week or so. Now, not huge names, but definitely names to, you know, at least have on your radar, maybe add in certain formats. We got Chase Meidroth with the White Sox, David Festa with the Twins, and JT Ginn being recalled with the Athletics. Both Festa and Ginn played in the major leagues last year. Now, this was Chase Meidroth's initial debut, so we'll start with him. He actually broke up the no-hit bid for Garrett Crochet the other night, which was pretty funny because they were traded for each other. But Meidroth is one where I think it's very format-dependent on, you know, how valuable he is. But yeah, I'll admit, I've come around a little bit on Meidroth. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a star for fantasy or anything like that. But the contact skills, the approach, all really good. I mean, he had more walks than strikeouts last year by a pretty healthy margin. It was about a 19% walk, 12.7% K rate. This year, same deal, 20% walk, 12.5% K rate in AAA. And zone contact well over, you know, 90, or right around 90% each year, give or take. Excuse me, that was overall. Yeah, zone was well over 90%. Doesn't strike out, doesn't, you know, swing and strike rate super low, 2.5-3%. And he was hitting for a little more power this year too. So, you know, maybe he gets to like a, you know, 12, 13, 14 home runs, something like that. He had a 40% hard hit rate in AAA this year, with 25 batted balls before getting the call, and already doing his thing, walking a ton so far. Three walks his first 10 plate appearances. And obviously, Chris, the profile is limited in a lot of ways, but You know, I think there could be some value, especially in like in a points format here for Chase Meidroth.
Yeah, I think that's where he plays best. Points league or OBP league. It's I absolutely believe that he can be solid there. I mean, the bat to ball is good. The plate approach is really good. And Meidroth actually has been lifting the ball more this year. Obviously, the home runs, you know, he was popping off early. It was no shock that he got called up. They couldn't really hold him down. I mean, just how well he was hitting. And he ran 100% zone contact rate in AAA. Like, that speaks for itself. The ninth percentile EV of 102 was fine. Like, I mean, that's right where Meidroth was last year. But really the biggest thing was just, like, he was hitting the ball at ideal angles a bit more often. And that was really leading to those home runs. Like, his pulled fly ball EV was 99.6. In a small sample, but still, like, those are some encouraging signs that we saw, and he's hitting the sweet spot more often. So I think Meidroth has his use for sure, and I think that he can be pretty solid, but he's going to play exceptionally better in the OBP or points league format.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Then they get the two arms here with David Festa and JT Ginn. Ginn was off to a pretty good start in AAA this year. And Festa had a decent start the other day with the Twins in his return, 4 2/3 innings, no runs allowed, 4 strikeouts, had a 4.90 ERA in 64 1/3 innings with Minnesota last year, but definitely pitched a lot better than that near 5 ERA would indicate. And he had an 8.3% walk rate, 27.8% K rate. A lot of the ERA indicators were, you know, close to, you know, a full run lower, a lot like the upper 3, low 4 range. And he should get some run here as you got Pablo Lopez on the IL. Who knows how much longer, you know, they'll keep Chris Paddock in that rotation. So maybe you see a little bit of Zebby Matthews upcoming here as well, who I still like a good bit. But David Festa, Chris, you know, 25 years old, you know, had a pretty impressive, you know, that's a pretty good night. Was at 19.5%. K minus walk rate as a rookie. I think people kind of gloss over that when they say like the whip and the ERA being kind of, you know, not terrible, but kind of bleh. But what type of arm do you think David Festa has a chance of being? Like, you know, like the top 40 arm, top 60 arm? Kind of what are your thoughts there on his long term value?
No, I think that Festa can certainly be a top 50 or higher type guy. I mean, he's got the stuff, and the three pitches that he has are really, really good. And the fastball, he throws a slider and a changeup as well. The slider and changeup have been a similar kind of velo band, but I think the fastball is a really good pitch, and I think it's going to play. And you look at kind of the profile here, and, you know, Festa's had his ups and downs, but when after he got demoted last year, so he came up, had a couple of bad starts, got demoted, he came back. He was really, really good the final, like, 6 starts of the year. So he's got the major league experience already. He's got an arsenal that certainly has traits that could lead to success. I mean, the whiff rates and swinging strike rates he's been running on the slider and changeup have been really, really good. So I'd expect that to translate over and continue throughout the season from an MLB perspective as well. And so, yeah, I think the Festa's, he checks a lot of boxes. I think people were surprised that, you know, Zebby wasn't coming up, but, you know, Festa's good. Like, Festa's a better pitcher than Zebby, in my opinion. Maybe that's crazy, but that's kind of where I am on him.
Yeah, I think it's close. I mean, I think you could argue Zebby's a little bit safer long term, maybe a little more upside with Festa, but, you know, like I was talking about Kansas City having a good rotation. Obviously, Minnesota's got a really good rotation. And once they, you know, obviously they have when Lopez is back, you know, Joe Ryan, you know, once you kind of start including these young guys like Zebby and Festa consistently into the mix, that's a pretty good rotation 1 through 5. And, yeah, Festa's got that ability to miss bats. I mean, we've seen that consistently, you know, minors, major leagues. They said 28% K rate last year, that changeup. You know, really good, can miss bats with that slider as well. And he goes to those consistently. I mean, it's roughly 50, actually it was about a 60% usage rate combined on those two offerings last year. I was running 50% in this outing, you know, the other day, but see how that kind of transcribes going forward here. Yeah, I think top 50-ish range, I think, is very reasonable for Festa. I don't think top 25. I'm not that high on him, but I think there's definitely a pretty fun arm here for fantasy. But what about JT Ginn here, Chris? Kind of a less heralded name than David Festa. But he held his own last year with the Athletics, 4.24 ERA in 34 innings, had 29 strikeouts, only a 6.3% walk rate. He came back for his 2025 debut the other day, 5 1/3 innings, 1 run, 6 strikeouts, and he's throwing the ball harder this year. He was right around 93 last year, close to 95 with that sinker. This year, throwing a cutter a little bit more. He's kind of overhauled the arsenal a little bit here. You're not really going change up anymore. That was just one start. We'll see if he starts using that a little bit more here moving forward. But really was just sinker, slider, cutter in that outing a few days ago. So what do you think we could have here with JT Ginn? Like how in are you on him right now?
No, I really like Ginn. What he showed us so far has been really, really good. And I think that there's been tangible improvement. Like, I don't think it was a fluky start. The velocity's up. That's obviously the first thing that's notable is that Ginn's had the better velocity this year. I mean, the fastball sitting near 95 and touching 97.5, like, that's a notable jump for him from where he was. The traits are good on the pitch. And he's got several different offerings that he can go to where he has intangibles that can make him successful. So, you know, I like JT Ginn a lot. And I think that while it's not going to be an easy ballpark for him to step in and pitch in, I still believe that there's going to be, you know, some good results here. So I like Ginn, and I think he's kind of a sneaky ad. I don't think a lot of people are in on him. So I'm looking to add kind of where I can.
Yeah, I think he's definitely really, you know, athletic arms usually get undervalued a good bit. And Ginn was, I mean, he was never, you know, a nothing prospect, but he was never really a highly touted. Maybe at one point he stuck into the back end of a top 100, maybe, but that's probably about it. You know, he never was super highly ranked prospect coming up through the minor leagues. But yeah, I think there's some sneaky, like maybe, you know, top 75 to 100 pitcher value there. I like the, you know, the sinker has been a really good pitch for him this year. I love that increased velocity and getting a ton of ground balls. Definitely a good thing for him. Never really been one that allowed a ton of home runs anyway. Only allowed 4 home runs in 34 innings last year. So maybe he's not the biggest. Probably won't have a huge K rate. Probably more of a league average K rate guy. Maybe 22, 23, 24%. But I think he can, you know, keep the damage to a minimum. The sinker, limit the walks a decent clip. So, yeah. He's still only 25, too. I would have guessed he was a year or two older than that. But still pretty young. So, yeah, I think there's some sneaky value to be had here with JT Ginn and David Festa as well. Let's go over to the prospect side here. Got a lot of names, so let's hop right into it. A few promotions. Oh, we already talked about the promotions. Never mind the bad performances, I meant to say. Got a few of those, more so with good performances, but we got 3 to talk about on the bad side here, starting with Colson Montgomery, who has a 1,000,000% strikeout rate this year. You know, in all reality, it's 48.1%, 26 strikeouts so far in 54 plate appearances for AAA Charlotte. Does have 2 home runs, though no other extra base hits to talk about. 3 walks, you know, nothing really has gone right for him. You know, contact rate very low, though the zone contact rate isn't terrible right now in AAA. But a lot of strikeouts here for Montgomery, Chris. And that's really never been, you know, a huge issue for him up until last year, though he had 28.5% K rate last year. But he, you know, as everyone knows, he was dealing with that hand issue. So, you know, kind of where has your thought process changed on Montgomery now? Are you, you know, a little more concerned with him? Or are you still feeling that he's a pretty good buy in dynasty leagues right now?
I kind of wonder, like, how mentally defeated is he? That, like, you know, he honestly, I was a little surprised they sent him down as soon as they, or as early as they did in the spring, I guess. Like, he was, I had to pull up the spring stats. I don't want to speak without like actually having the stats in front of me. But like, if I recall, like I feel like he was decent in spring training.
Yeah, I think he was, yeah.
That's what I thought. And so, I guess he didn't have enough at-bats. Like, he had a homer, but he got 9 at-bats, and then he got sent down. So, he had more at-bats last year in spring training. I don't know. I just feel like he's kind of being jerked around, and I kind of wonder if he's dealing with an injury also. Like, he was randomly pulled, like, sore scratch shortly before the game last week, and he missed a couple days, so I wonder if he's dealing with something. Which, if it is, like, it's just injuries piling up, like injury after injury with Colson. So I have something to worry about, you know, myself. But, yeah, I think that when you look at him, like, he still had a ball 112 this year, so, like, there's still juice. The ninth percentile looks good, even though it's a small sample, so looking like 2 or 3 batted balls for the ninth percentile there. So not a lot to take away from that. But it's interesting, like, the approach is gone. Like, he's chasing so much. The contact's terrible. I kind of just wonder how defeated does Colson Montgomery feel, like, that he's not gotten a shot. Like, you know, and that's not to say, like, he hasn't been, like, outplayed or anything, or he hasn't earned it. But, you know, I don't know. It's an interesting spot for him. How low do you have to be to buy on him? That's kind of the question. And I don't know. Like, I don't have a great answer of, like, what would I pay to get him kind of thing.
Yeah, he's an interesting one. You know, I feel like I've always been a little bit lower than most on Montgomery. But, you know, I still had him ranked, like, you know, decently. It wasn't like I was outside my top 200 or anything like that. But with him, it's always been obviously you needed the bat to be there because he's not – he's one of those, like, not direct comp, but one of those Corey Seager-type shortstops who doesn't add value with his legs like most, you know, middle infielders do. So you needed that bat to be there, both in terms of, you know, hitting for average, getting on base, hitting for power. And he definitely has had times during his, you know, minor league career where he has shown all those abilities. But, yeah, I feel like there's just been a lot of issues popping up here and there that have kind of limited him from showing those skills for a prolonged time. And now he's off to that really – I'm not going to – I'm not, like, holding this start too much against him. I'm not going to be like, oh, he sucks, I'm going to drop him down 150 spots in my rankings. But, yeah, I definitely am concerned, and someone I'm definitely going to keep a close eye on here moving forward. This next name is someone I'm definitely – I've been dropping pretty steadily every month, every rankings update, and that's Davison De Los Santos. You know, last year, you know, everyone loved it. He had 40 home runs and 120 RBIs. Those are fun numbers. But once he got to the Miami system, out of the hitter's havens he was in Amarillo and in Reno, double A and triple A for Arizona, you know, he went to a more neutral, I think maybe Jacksonville even plays a little more pitcher friendly on that end of the spectrum. Really showed that, all right, he was definitely inflated a good bit by those stadiums. And this year off to a very poor start. Still has yet to have his first home run of 2025, 14 games in, 0 home runs, 39.3% strikeout rate, 245, 321, 286. Slash line, and it's kind of funny. He's only hitting 245, but he has a 429 BABIP. Not really a combination of average and BABIP you see too often here. But, I mean, is there any value for De Los Santos anymore, Chris? Like, do you think he's ever even for the Miami Marlins, who don't have a lot in his way, do you think he's ever just like a full-time guy, or is he just one of those guys that, you know, has a couple hot weeks here and there where he gets into some home runs, but for the most part, he's a guy that's not really fantasy relevant?
I don't know. I mean, like, I think he's just going to be so streaky that's just going to be the nature of who he is. I mean, you're running a sub 60% zone contact rate right now. Shocker, like, his contact's always been bad. People dogged me so hard all last year when I was never in on, like, he's never touched my top 100, and people, like, lost their minds about it. But you want to know why? Because he can't make contact. He has zero approach. Fascinatingly enough, like, his approach actually looks better than it ever has. He's chasing at a 36% clip. It's the best, like, approach that we've seen from him at any point in his career. It's a small sample. Yes, Davison De Los Santos hits the ball hard. He barrels it up. I just don't think it matters. I think this is Franmil Reyes. Like, that's who I think it is.
Yeah.
And yeah, Franmil Reyes ran into a 30 home run season, but he was also out of major league really quick. And so, like, that's this profile to me. And it's a little bit concerning. I'm not sure that I can just fully buy in.
Yeah, I think De Los Santos, he'll still get some run. I mean, he'll probably get it going at some point, and he'll have some time with Miami this year. And going forward, maybe he has like one of those years where he hits like 27 home runs, but is it with like what, a 210 average? And that's just not valuable. Like, that is zero value. Like, that super, like, when I think cheap power, my mind kind of goes to these days, the current version of, like, you know, like a Rhys Hoskins. He's still, some guys are still getting like at least like 240 with like 25 home runs, not 210. Like, that's just, it does more detriment to your team than it adds value. You can find power more frequently nowadays. You don't need those, you know, cheap power, those Joey Gallo types anymore. Not that I can argue you never really did, but especially these days. So, yeah, I'm not. I was one that he did sneak into my back end of my top 100. That was definitely a mistake. Definitely something I'm not going to do again. Yeah, he has been steadily moving down my rankings here. It's even, I don't even know where I have him right now, but he's not going to be top 200 for me. He might be like 250 range. Where do you think you'll have him in your rankings, Chris?
Yeah, you know, I was trying to think of like a similar player to like, who is a prospect like that's just this power only. And so I was trying to think of like in my rankings, like who would comp similarly. And so I don't know. So I was trying to look down my list and be like, okay, like this guy has the same profile. Therefore, like I want to put Davison kind of by him. So, man, it's like tough to find like a super great comp. Like he's kind of an enigma in that sense, where he's got the big power, but not much else. And
the first couple of names I thought of, like, and then not whether he's right or wrong, like Eric Batonti, but he's still like really young. I don't want to group those two together. There's like a 4-year age gap there. Spencer Jones runs, and I mean, I don't think his issues are quite as bad. So yeah, it's kind of, I don't really have a great, you know, Brock Wilkin, I still like more than Davison. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just hard to find somebody. Like, he's an outlier with power. He's also an outlier with contact and approach. So, like, he's, like, got both extremes going on, and I'm not sure, like, either are very good. And I just keep scrolling down, and I, like, I don't know. I can't find a good comp, which tells me, like, he's kind of unique in that sense, and I'm not sure that's a good thing.
Maybe a Rhys Hines? No.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, they're pretty similar age.
Not all that dissimilar, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
contact's terrible.
None of these names are super intriguing anymore, but yeah, Davison definitely trending in the wrong direction. And then another guy here that's trending in the wrong direction after trending up in a really big way last year, Quinn Matthews. I mean, he was one of the biggest pitching prospect breakouts of 2024. He had the increased velo, was just dominating really the entire season up until he got to AAA, which he had four starts there last year, three starts there so far this year, and none of those outings have been that great. Now he's on the IL, so you got to wonder if that played a bit into it. But in his seven AAA starts between last year and this year, 27 combined innings, 6.33 ERA, 2.15 WHIP, and as many walks as strikeouts, 29 of each, which is a 21.6% clip. So, you know, velo was down too. You got to wonder if that injury kind of plays into that. I don't know. What are you reading into this? Like, do you think last year's breakout was, you know, maybe a bit fluky? Are you still believing in that? You're looking to buy low now? Kind of, where are you at with Matthews? Kind of a hard one to figure out right now.
I think he's hurt. I mean, obviously he's hurt. He hit the IL, but how bad is it, I guess? I kind of think he's just cooked. Like, how bad's that injury? Left shoulder soreness. There's some questionable things. Like, when's he going to return? We don't know. And yeah, I look at the pitch data and I'm like, yep, this looks like somebody that is potentially injured. And the results obviously speak for it. Like the command was uncharacteristically bad for Quinn Matthews. Like strike throwing, horrific. Like 15 walks in 10 innings, that's not who Quinn Matthews is. So I kind of wonder, like, how bad's the shoulder? How long's it been bothering him? And I don't think we're going to get an answer on that, unfortunately. Like, we're not going to get an answer of how injured is he anytime soon. I kind of feel that.
Yeah, you got to wonder, like, does this turn into a labrum issue or, you know, who knows? I'm just speculating now, but yeah, I'm not going to sit here and be like, all right, you know, Matthews is fluky. He's done. He's not good. I kind of want to wait and see kind of how things progress here before I kind of make any determination moving forward. So if you have Matthews, I'd say hold for now. So obviously, it's not a great time to try to sell given the recent production and the injury. Very terrible time to sell. So I would definitely hold right now with Quinn Matthews. Let's go over to some better performances so far. A couple in the Dodger system here with Zaire Hope and Alex Freeland. Obviously, one much more highly ranked than the other. But Zaire Hope just had a nice little four-hit game the other day. Is slashing 400, 488, 714 in his first 42 plate appearances for high A. Six extra base hits, two home runs, even four steals. Alex Freeland, who's up in AAA, 344, 421, 484 slash, seven extra base hits, five steals, 11.8% walk rate in 76 plate appearances so far. But we'll start with Hope here, Chris. I mean, he's already kind of in that top, you know, top 20, top 25 range for, I think, a lot of people at this point. And given that we've already had some promotions this year, or graduations, I should say, we're going to have, several more here over the next few months, you got to assume. So, how high do you think Zaire Hope can climb in, kind of prospect rankings here? Do you think Hope could get up to, maybe like a top 5, top 10 prospect by midseason?
It's possible. I'm not moving him much at all yet. The contact numbers are pretty bad right now. He's whiffing a lot. And yeah, I think this is kind of what we expected out of Hope as far as like a production standpoint. And this is the time of year when you've got to parse through like early surface numbers and like what the underlying data says. And Hope's 65% contact rate's bad. Like that's a major concern. The strikeout rate's higher than we've seen it. I'm not worried. Like it doesn't really concern me because it's a week. Like no number really changes my opinion at this point of any player. And so like I think that Hope has that potential, yes, to be a top 10 prospect. I think he's set in that 25 range for me most of the offseason since seeing him in the AFL. And like what's it going to take for him to move up? Yeah, like you're right. I think we got some graduations. Like Dominguez graduated. Did somebody else at the top graduate?
Cruz graduated.
Cruz, yep, that was the other one.
Yeah, he graduated like third game in a year or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, he was just like two and done. But yeah, you sort of see some graduates, and that obviously helps Hope's case. So it'll be fascinating to kind of see his progression. Just like, being in high A, that's a new challenge for him. But like, really, like, Hope needs to be in double A. Like, I don't think he's going to be challenged at all in high A. That home run he hit the other night was like a hanging breaking ball over the middle. And like, for what it's worth, I mean, most prospects are home running these days off of hanging breaking balls, but it was on a lefty too. And he smoked it. And then he nearly left the yard on Sunday. Like he tripled on, or he was a homer shy of the cycle on Sunday, but his triple actually, the right field fence in Stockton's weird. Like it's like a normal fence height. And all of a sudden in the right field corner, it like juts up to like, I don't know. It looked like it was like 25 plus feet tall. And he banged it off the top of the wall. So he would have homered again, most likely on Sunday. So he's swinging it really well. And I think that's the encouraging thing. Like you just want to see Hope do the things that you expected him to do kind of. So, and he's doing that. So like he's meeting expectations. He's checking boxes. Like, let's kind of see where it goes from here kind of thing is where I'm at.
Yeah, no, that's definitely fair. And yeah, I have him right around 20 right now in my rankings. But it's a big glob in that part of the rankings. A lot of fun players. You know, Kevin McGonigal's in that range. You know, Leo DeVries is in that range. Josue DePaula in that range. You know, a few other guys as well. But yeah, that's a really fun range to be in. And so yeah, I think you definitely keep moving up. You mean probably get Campbell graduating here next, yep. You know, was it a few weeks? Probably. I forget what he's at for a bat, probably 60 something right now. And you figure you're going to get, you know, probably get Shaw graduate soon. You still think Anthony graduates at some point by midseason. Maybe we get Nick Kurtz graduating if he gets called up soon. Joe probably graduates by, you know, sometime in June. I feel like he's probably four or five guys that are ahead of him right now. Maybe even Lauer. If Lauer gets the call, we'll see. But yeah, you can see four or five of those guys graduate here over the next couple months. So yeah, I think Hope definitely has a case for top 10. We'll see how the season progresses. I mean, Alex Freeland, real quick, I know he's much less heralded name, but he's a guy that, you know, I've always said that every time I dig into like a team prospect rankings, I always find like one player, either positively or negatively, that I'm like, okay, I like this guy a lot more or a lot less than I thought I did. And for the Dodgers, that was Alex Freeland. He had a pretty good year last year, 18 home runs, 31 steals, 14.8% walk rate, and a 21.6% strikeout rate. You know, contact skills took a nice little jump last year. Overall contact rate jumped a good, like, 13% or so. In zone was pretty good. Swing and strike rate dropped as well. And he just does a lot of things, you know, decently. And that doesn't really stand out in any one area, but doesn't have any big red flags either, outside of the fact that he is a prospect for the Dodgers and has no clear path to playing time right now. So, you know, Alex Freeland, Chris, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, he's definitely he's a legit prospect. And yeah, I think that jump last year was obviously noteworthy to put him in the top 100s. And he did kind of slump a bit in AAA upon the call, but yeah, I think that Alex Freeland's like the next guy to get the call for them. I don't think it's Dalton Rushing. I think it's Alex Freeland, yeah, honestly, which is interesting. They also have Hyesung Kim, who's swinging it. How do they all fit? Like, that's kind of the question. Edmund's one of the best hitters in baseball right now, which is nuts.
He's been phenomenal, yeah.
Yeah, Mookie Betts is playing short. Like, in a crazy world, I guess you could move Edmund to center field because Pahis isn't performing. Hyesung Kim, like, you know, what do they do with him? Also, like, I've got major concerns about Hyesung Kim still. I wrote about it this morning. Like, he's got a 52% contact rate on breaking balls right now. Like, there's some major concerns still despite him hitting a 462-foot home run. Like, that doesn't indicate that he's just all of a sudden ready to go. But, you know, Freeland's a well-rounded player. He's hitting the ball hard. He's making a lot of contact. His approach is really, really good. So I think that Freeland could be the next guy up for him. That wouldn't shock me a bit, actually. And maybe that might surprise some people, but like, you know, I think that Freeland's the guy for him if they need someone soon.
Yeah, no, I definitely could see that. Yeah, rushing, I don't know where he fits in, but
yeah, struggle.
I mean, at least Freeland can play the infield. I mean, maybe Mookie Betts gets hurt again. I hope he doesn't, but yeah. I mean, you could always see that. And your Edmonds had his injury issues too, if I recall correctly. So you can definitely see that path right there. But yeah, definitely came away a lot more impressed with him than I thought I would. And I could say that same, you know, I could echo that for this next guy here with Cincinnati Reds. And that's Sal Stewart, you know, 21 years old, you know, a little bit of second base, a little bit of third base. He's another one that does not stand out in any one area, but just does a lot of things well on the offensive side of the ball. You know, last year, limited to 80 games, had 8 home runs, 10 steals, 279 average, 391 OBP, nearly as many walks as strikeouts. You know, another one that has a really good blend of contact. You know, last year is around 83%, doesn't strike out much, walks. I think just sneaky power here. I mean, especially given his future home ballpark, I think he could be a guy that runs in like mid to upper teens home runs, maybe gets over 20, you know, in the low 20 range of some years. I don't think 25 plus or anything like that, but You know, definitely a guy that's just a really good professional hitter, not flashy in the slightest, but, you know, maybe everything clicks. You know, I don't think he'll be this good, but like Brian Reynolds, where it's like nothing flashy but Reynolds, but he's just a really solid hitter. And I think that similar thought process goes into my mind here with Sal Stewart. He's another one I bumped up my rankings a decent bit this offseason when I was digging further into the red system here. So where do you stand on Sal Stewart right now?
Yeah, I mean, he's that fringy top 100 type. He's kind of floated in that range for a while, and he's got a good approach. He makes a lot of contact. Yeah, I think the power is sneaky. Like last year, I mean, yeah, it was 8 home runs, but it was just 338 plate appearances as well. He's going to run high OBPs. We're also seeing him with much better launch angles this year, which is to his benefit, I think. He can run some, like, it's just kind of an underrated guy that's boring, and I think he's going to end up being somebody that people are really happy they rostered. It's not like he was, like, not hyped. I mean, this was a 32nd overall pick in 2022, first-round comp pick, got a $2 million bonus. So it's not like this guy's, like, just a nobody either. He's just 21 years old, playing second and third base. I think that's obviously important to note. He has not played second this year, but he did play some second last year. So given that flexibility and versatility, he can fit in the lineup. So yeah, it'll be pretty fascinating to see. So I like Stewart, a fringe top 100 prospect, and things going to be good.
Yeah, no, definitely right there with you. A couple other younger names here on the hitting site. We got Eduardo Tait, who's hitting for power so far this year in low A. 37 plate appearances, 3 doubles, 3 home runs, 281, 378, and 656 slash line. Then we got Luis Peña with the Milwaukee Brewers here, who is just running wild. He ran wild last year, the DSL. They jumped him over the complex level so far, and he's been hitting, he's been definitely holding his own and then some with low A. Doesn't have any home runs yet, but he's hitting 343, 442 OBP, more walks than strikeouts. Already has 10 steals in 12 attempts. You know, so I think Peña, a little bit more hyped name. I think they're both kind of getting, you know, some hype these days, but, you know, Peña, probably the more fun name given his ability to steal bags. You know, he's shown, obviously, he's a premium athlete, willingness to run, or, you know, early and often, you know, pretty efficient this year, only even caught twice. You know, advanced field hit for his age too, Chris, but, you know, that X factor, you know, it's how much power does he grow into? So, you know, do you think, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be this year's Jesus Made, but do you think he could be like this year's just big breakout prospect in general for Milwaukee, though he did start breaking down last year, obviously. Do you think that breakout could continue this year? And Dennis, what are your thoughts on both Peña and Eduardo Tait in general?
Yeah, I mean, Peña is a special kind of player where I think he's pretty underrated. I'll get some looks at him and Made and that entire Carolina team next week, which is exciting.
Yeah, nice.
I think that I think there is some juice in there. I believe so. I think that Pena's cleaned up the approach a little bit. He chased a lot last year. The chase rate is a little higher than you like to see in the DSL, but the contact remained good. Like, he made a lot of contact. He's got elite speed. He's got a frame where you're like, okay, there could be some power. I think he's cleaned up the approach in the early going. We'll see if it sustains. And I think there's some untapped power as well. Remember, this kid's 18 years old. He could be in high school still. So I'm really excited to see what he becomes. I think that he could push in the top 100s quick. Like, he's near top 125 guy right now for me. And so pushing him in the top 100 would not be shocking. Eduardo Tait, I mean, he's a stud. Like, the bat's extremely good. And it was last year. Remember, he was 17 last year in the complex in single A. So he'll spend this entire season at 18. At 17 years old last year, he hit a ball 112 miles an hour. He had like a 104 mile an hour ninth percentile and like a 87% on contact rate. Don't quote me. That's just off the top of my head. It was in that range. But the biggest thing with Tait is the approach. Like, can he clean up the chase rate a bit? Like, it was a little high last year. If I'm not mistaken, it was like near 40%. And this year, you know, they're really going, like, contact's all right. Like, it's not great. And he's still running that 40% chase rate. We'll see. I mean, he hit a ball. I've been to Clearwater a good many times. And I know it doesn't look it, but that highway behind the stadium is pretty far out there. And I know that Savant registered at like 394 on that home run that he hit off Ty Floyd. But that ball went a lot further than 394. Like, if you've ever been in that stadium, you can attest to that. Like, that highway is much further back, and he almost hit that home run in the highway. So Tyee can swing it, and he's got some big pop. So he's kind of the opposite of Luis Pena in that sense, but I do like both players.
Yeah, very, very different profiles. But you know, Tyee, I think for now, do you have Tyee top 100 right now?
Yeah, he's like top 75 for me.
Okay, yeah, I think that's kind of where he's trending right now. And it's kind of looking at where just in the catching prospect rankings here. I mean, just kind of filter it. I mean, obviously, you know, Basayo is ahead, Rushing's ahead. You know, I personally have Agustin Ramirez ahead. I know some people probably don't. I think you probably still put Kyle Teal ahead, probably Drake Baldwin. But yeah, I have a pretty big cluster of catchers in that 50 to 100 range. You know, Teal's in there, Baldwin's in there, Ballesteros is in there. You know, I still have Harry Ford in there. He's kind of holding on for dear life in that range. But in Tyee's definitely got into that range. So I think he's probably like, you know, top 6-7-ish range for catching prospects. And, you know, how many of these guys stick behind the plate, obviously, is the question. But, yeah, definitely he's the youngest one of that grouping by a good margin. I don't have Ethan Salas up there. I know some do. I don't. But the next youngest is, out of those guys, I mean, I'm not including Briseño anymore because I think he's first base. He would have been the next youngest, but Ballesteros is, you know, approaching like 21 and a half right now. A lot of the other guys are like 23, 24, you know, Ford's even 22, Teal's 23, Baldwin's 24, Ramirez is 23. So, yeah, definitely the youngest one in that top 100 for me, which I think is really, really exciting there for Eduardo Tyee. So that's all the hitters. Let's go over to the four pitching prospects we have here to close up the show. We got Nolan McLean, Ian Seymour, Cal Stephan, and Manuel Rodriguez. You know, McLean with the Mets, Seymour with the Rays, Stephan with the Blue Jays, and Rodriguez with the Brewers. So a few Brewers prospects here in this episode. But I want to start with McLean because, you know, last year was kind of doing the two-way thing. Didn't really go well because he was just striking out a ton on the hitting side. So now he's only pitching in Double-A Binghamton. So hopefully I'll get a live look at him later in the season. I think maybe early part of June, I want to say. I got to double-check that schedule. But first two starts of the year, combined for 9 innings, 7 hits, 1 run, 3 walks, 14 strikeouts. Arguably has one of the best sliders in all of baseball. Especially in the minor leagues, that thing is absolutely filthy. So where do you think McLean can kind of ascend to in prospect ranking, Chris, now that he is, you know, solely focusing on the pitching? There's a lot of good stuff here in this profile. So you kind of, where do you see him ascending to this season?
I mean, I think he's got the stuff to be one of the better pitching prospects in the game. I mean, the fastball's electric. I think the sliders might be the best slider in the minors. Maybe that's crazy to say, but that's how good I think he is. He spent the offseason for the first time ever not focusing on hitting, which was obviously notable, but he's an incredible athlete. Like, McLean is such a good athlete and mover on the mound. Like, he just adjusts so well. You know, it's not, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, like, this is Bubba Chandler. Like, I know it's a similar, like, trajectory, but I'm not going to tell you that because, you know, I don't believe that. I mean, Bubba Chandler's out here throwing 1-1.5 for one, but slider's good. It's a two-pitch mix with McLean, really. I mean, he's got a cutter, but it's just fastball slider, honestly. And the fastball's good. I mean, he's got a plus fastball. I think he's got a 70 to 80 grade slider. So it's been awesome to see. And I believe that the command improvements will come with the fact that he's now just focusing on pitching. McLean had big power as a hitter, so when you think about, like, the movement of a body, like, somebody that can hit for power obviously has good rotational acceleration, and he's going to show that on the mound, too. It's only going to help him out. So,
yeah,
McLean, I think, could ascend to being one of the better arms in the minors. So, that wouldn't shock me at all if we look back and say, yeah, this is a top 10 pitching prospect in a couple of months. And honestly, like before the season, like my bold prediction was that McLean would be ranked above Brandon Sproat, and I kind of stand by that still.
I literally was just about to ask you that, if you thought he could be like more highly ranked than Sproat by end of the season. So kind of took the words right out of my mouth there. So yeah, definitely. you know, McLean, yeah, that slider is filthy. I mean, let's look at his last start, his video of his last start the other day. Yeah, it's just freaking movement on that pro. It's just absolutely disgusting. So, yeah, he's definitely a really fun guy to watch in video, and I can't wait to get some live looks at him here later on in the season. You know, out of these other names here, Chris, you know, give an interesting bunch here with Ian Seymour, who's, you know, the old statesman of this grouping, you know, Cal Stephan, a recent draftee, and Manuel Rodriguez, a younger, you know, international arm in the Brewer system here. So we kind of clump these guys together to close out the show. You know, is there any of these three? I mean, they're all off to, you know, good starts here. I'll list it off here real quick. Ian Seymour, first 15 innings in AAA. Only 4 runs allowed, 3 walks, 23 strikeouts. Now, Manuel Rodriguez is 10 innings, 3 earned, 3 walks, and 15 strikeouts so far. And that is in low A. And then you got, Cal Stephan so far. I mean, he had, I think it was a 9 or 10 strikeout game a few days ago. So he's off to a really good start here overall. He is at 11 innings, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 15 Ks. Yeah, it's only 2 starts, but you know, anything to read into these hot starts for these guys? I know Rodriguez is a guy that you were talking about, you know, the other multiple times over the last week or two. So it's kind of, what are your thoughts on these three guys?
Yeah, I mean, Rodriguez has to see a tick up with the fastball to be successful. Like, he's 88 to 90, so it's got to tick up. The secondaries are good, and there's traits there that, you know, could improve. He is 19 in high A, so I think he is, outside of Valera, like, he's the second youngest pitcher in high A right now, and the Brewers have always been pretty aggressive with him. But the bat missing's there. It has been. There's good traits, for sure, other than the fastball velocity. Like, that's the biggest concern. And Ian Seymour's kind of, like, just who he is at this point. Like, he's a changeup, kind of dominant type arm with a fastball that sits 91. Like, it doesn't do a lot for me. I'm not sure it's going to be a major league starter consistently. Seymour kind of strikes me as like an up and down kind of arm. Yep. His fastball is good enough at the velocity to play. I don't know. I'm just kind of not fully in there. And so, like, I'm picking one. It's definitely Carl Steven. I mean, seeing him in spring breakout was really eye-opening, because when you watched him pitch in succession with Jake Bloss, Trey Savage, and then Steven, and even Kendry Rojas after, like, that was, it was very good to put into perspective, like, how good Steven really is. I mean, yeah, he sits 93, 94, so it's not that much up from what we were talking about with Ian Seymour, but that's enough of a velocity jump where it can work. And it's even better. Like, I mean, he throws from like a 6-foot release high, but it's 20 inches of vert. It's a pretty flat vertical approach angle. Some good stuff with it. The changeup, I like that pitch a lot. He's throwing a curve and slider. Like, the depth of Steven's arsenal, I think, can take him a long way. And I'm really intrigued by the potential there. So I would definitely take Carl Steven over either of those other guys right now, just given the pitch traits and the, like, just seeing them, like, watching a person stacking him up, like, it's really good stuff.
Yeah, and he's the one I was kind of looking at too, because there's a lot of things to like in this profile with Cal Steven. Like, you know, he's really strong, 6'4", like 220 frame. Definitely, he looks like a starter. I mean, I don't think there's any, you know, issues with the frame there. It's a really strong frame throughout. And, you know, commands, you know, pretty well, you know, his entire arsenal. You mentioned the arsenal doesn't, like, blow you away, but it's a solid and deep arsenal as well. And that, again, limits the walks as well. I mean, look at what he did in his collegiate career. I mean, his last year at Mississippi State, only 21 walks in 96 innings in the spring of 2024, which was definitely a nice little step forward from where he was at Purdue University in the 2 years prior. So yeah, definitely an intriguing arm there. So I just want to see how Toronto develops him. Definitely have some questions with Toronto, but in general in their development, but kind of we'll see how they progress with Cal Steven. You know, something I just realized recently too, you know, as I was like, you know, that name Cal, like, you know, K-H-A-L, you see that says, you know, the beginning part of his middle name. His full name is Michael Calden Steven, middle name K-H-A-L-D-E-N, which is kind of interesting. Like, his first name is just Michael. I don't know why he didn't go with that. Probably some story behind it that we'll probably hear in an interview at some point in time. Unless do you know why he goes by that? Have you heard?
No idea.
No? Yeah, this is something I saw recently, and I was looking him up. I'm like, oh, that's, you know, Michael Calden Steven there. But it definitely a fun little arm there in the Toronto system. They get a few fun arms, see which of them pans out. But yeah, definitely a lot of fun early season, you know, production here, both good and bad. We'll see what sticks, what changes here moving forward. But that is going to wrap up the show. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We will be back with you again next week. But until then, everyone take care.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.